The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and thus begins our clinical focus series. Actually, we began it last week, it was the week before, because the 4th of July has me a little bollocked up holiday. But the week before, we ran a clinical focus on the subject of underweight and how to overcome underweight. That may seem like a strange topic for the vast majority of you. Most of us trying to lose weight or maintain weight loss, but for some of us, it's a struggle to put on weight. And a couple of weeks ago, we visited with Hoffman Center Supplement Department Manager Grimaldi Vargas and interviewed her about her program to gain 22 pounds of healthy weight and complete a Spartan race. And then we talked about some of the clinical considerations, supplements, and lifestyle measures that are necessary for doing that. And so we continue today with our clinical focus series, and we're going to roll through some of the major disease categories that you may encounter on your journey of life. And we will tackle as many of them as we can, marching through the entire medical repertoire, looking at various health problems. And we also welcome your suggestions. And when I put it out on our radio program on Intelligent Medicine the other Saturday, we got quite a few suggestions also via our newsletter article. So lots of you have special interest topics that you want me to focus on. Be patient. We will get to them, get to as many of them as we can. Today's clinical focus is on a very, very important subject. It's on Alzheimer's disease, prevention and treatment. And it's a big subject because a new study suggests that approximately 99.6% of Alzheimer's disease drug trials are unsuccessful. This according to new research from the Cleveland Clinic. They used data from clinicaltrials.gov. That's a government website that tracks ongoing clinical trials. And the researchers discovered that in the past decade, 244 drugs had been tested, and only one drug was a success. And that drug probably was a modest success, because the drugs that seemed to help patients with Alzheimer's disease help just a little bit, help transiently, do nothing to slow the progression of the disease or prevent it from occurring in the first place. So unlike the drugs that we have to prevent heart disease, prevent osteoporosis, we really don't have anything that plausibly can offer the prospect of preventing Alzheimer's disease, or once it's occurred, effectively treating it. Though the stark fact is that baby boomers are aging. 10,000 baby boomers are reaching the Alzheimer's risk period per day, and the need for drug treatment is immediate. Now, they estimate that we're looking forward from a current level of 5.5 million victims of Alzheimer's disease to around 14 million by 2050 if we don't develop something. So that's really unsustainable. And we hope that more progress will be made towards drugs that will affect this. But it seems like they've taken a wrong turn in the research. The research looks at drugs that dissolve the neurofibrillary tangles that are associated with Alzheimer's disease. And they just don't work. They just don't seem to do the job. So 99.6 of them failed. So this clinical focus, today we're going to focus on Alzheimer's prevention and treatment. So first of all, let's look at some of the theories about diet when it comes to Alzheimer's disease. Clearly, diet may play a role, but it's unclear, you know, if you look at the extremes of diet, whether it's a vegetarian diet, that doesn't seem to slow the progression of Alzheimer's disease. In fact, there's a study that suggests from China suggesting that high, actually from Hawaii, suggesting that high consumption of soy products may somewhat hasten the onset of Alzheimer's disease. That's not conclusive because soy, I'm not anti-soy. Soy may have its benefits in terms of prostate cancer, breast cancer prevention. But when it comes to Alzheimer's disease, vegetarian diet is not the answer. The common wisdom is that a Mediterranean diet has a lot of benefits for prevention of Alzheimer's disease. According to studies, increasing intake of fish and nuts and lots of vegetables and fruits and monounsaturated fatty acids, especially olive oil, which is enriched with beneficial polyphenols, and the use of red wine, resveratrol. These are things that, from a dietary standpoint, may help to slow the progression of Alzheimer's disease. Not prevent it entirely in susceptible individuals, but lower the risk somewhat. And, of course, there is the important work of Dr. David Perlmutter. If you haven't read the book Grain Brain yet, I suggest that you pick it up. You can listen to a podcast that we did with Dr. Perlmutter last year, but he articulates it very well in his book Grain Brain. A couple of dietary factors may make a difference from his standpoint. I'll boil it down for you. He believes that gluten grains may play a big role in promoting Alzheimer's disease, many neurological conditions. And I find that that's true in patients who have mysterious neurological conditions. And I recently saw a patient who has not just Parkinson's disease, but dementia, and it's sort of an unclear form of brain deterioration. She had very high antibodies to gluten. In fact, she met the criteria for celiac disease. And we've urged her to go on a gluten-free diet. Although, you know, some of the damage has already been done. It's impossible to say whether we can completely reverse it, but we can slow the progression when we get patients off gluten. Gluten definitely can cause neurological disease. It creates an autoimmune process in the body, and the brain may be a target organ. Also, from the standpoint of Dr. Perlmutter, a very low-carb diet is beneficial because the brain preferentially uses fat for a fuel. When it depends on sugar or glucose, that is an unreliable fuel because levels of glucose fluctuate up and down. And his work elaborates on a theory that there are actually three forms of diabetes. There's diabetes type 1, where you depend on insulin. There's type 2, where you become insulin resistant and fat. And then there's what's called type 3 diabetes, which means that the brain cells become insulin resistant. They don't respond well to insulin. They don't uptake glucose very well. The net result is that you get sort of a brownout in energy production in the brain. And so that's the gist of the book, The Grain Brain. He recommends a low-carb, cereal-free diet. And, you know, there's some controversy about that, too, because it's thought that a certain subfraction of patients with Alzheimer's disease, they may have what's called the APOE4 gene, that a high-fat diet may be harmful for that condition. Dr. Perlmutter does not agree with that, but there's still controversy that exists. If you have that gene that can be tested for, sometimes it's recommended that people go on an ultra-low-fat diet, even with the pitfalls of that diet in terms of carbohydrates. It remains controversial, but I got to say that I am more partial to Dr. Perlmutter's view of the world. And certainly in patients with diabetes, they have a much accelerated rate of Alzheimer's disease. It's been found that even if you don't have diabetes, if you have a hemoglobin A1C that's, say, above 5.6, which is considered normal, for each 0.1 increase in your hemoglobin A1C, there is a substantial increase, about 10%, in your risk for developing dementia and Alzheimer's disease. So there's really something to this carbohydrate theory driving brain deterioration through an insulin type 3 mechanism. So when it comes to diet, you know, what are some of the beneficial substances? Well, actually, coffee seems to fend off dementia, even caffeinated coffee. It may be the beneficial dark polyphenols in coffee, or it may be the caffeine itself that acts as a brain stimulant. Also, berries, which are rich in proanthocyanidins, purplish, bluish pigments, these seem to have a helpful effect in slowing the progression of Alzheimer's disease. There are animal studies that show that older animals suffering from mild dementia perform better in mazes when fed blueberries. And so if you are the human equivalent of an aging rat who can't find your way through the maze of life, perhaps a daily serving of blueberries might be beneficial. All right, when it comes to one of the popular theories about Alzheimer's disease is keep your brain active. And certainly there's evidence that people who are occupied, who are interacting socially with family and friends, people who work late in their lives, may be at lower risk for Alzheimer's disease. Then there's the theory that if you perform crossword puzzles or mental gymnastics, as a whole company based on that premise, Lumosity, where you play brain games that keep your brain stimulated. You know, it's like brain is kind of like a muscle. If you don't use it, you lose it. Well, actually, studies on that are somewhat inconclusive, which has led the Federal Trade Commission to crack down on claims by Lumosity that it may stave off dementia. So they no longer can say that. They say keep your brain active. They can make that claim, but they can't say our program will prevent you from developing Alzheimer's disease. That's a disease claim and a drug-like claim and doesn't meet the threshold of evidence that they require. So they got a little bit of a slap on the wrist. And actually, studies are controversial about these brain games. Do they really work? Well, they might, but you know, some studies suggest to the contrary. What does seem to work is physical exercise. People who are physically active, perhaps they're oxygenating their brain, perhaps the physical activity is engaging parts of their brain that are important for forming neural connections. And therefore, physical activity pretty clearly preserves brain function. If you're sedentary, sitting around, less good for your brain. Also, there are studies looking at stress and the brain. If you're subject to lots and lots of stress and you have very high levels of cortisol, that actually shrinks your hippocampus. Your hippocampus is the part of your brain that's associated with memory. That's a very key part of the brain that deteriorates in dementia and Alzheimer's disease. And so if you're walking around basking in stress hormones or bathing in stress hormones, that's not good for your heart, your blood vessels, and your bones, but it's also not good for your brain. Other studies suggest that sleep deprivation is not good for your brain. People who suffer from sleep apnea, where they don't get deep or restful sleep, and they possibly deoxygenate during times where they're gasping for breath because they're snoring or their tongue lolls back into their epiglottis, and they have a temporary period of anoxia or oxygen deprivation, that's not good for the brain either. That may accelerate dementia. Certainly exhaustion is not good for any part of the body, and certainly the brain might be vulnerable. What about the effects of genetics? Well, genetics are part of the story. There is no single Alzheimer's gene. We know that people, as I said earlier, who have the APOE4 double hit are much more likely to get atherosclerosis and dementia, very high rate if you have that gene. It almost makes me reluctant to screen people with that test because it's a very frightening prospect if you become aware that you have a double E4, but that can also prompt you to very aggressive preventive action to stave off the disease if you get early warning. So genetics may play a role. Also, there's evidence that the MTHFR gene, that's getting a lot of play these days, methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase, a high percentage of people have defects in methylation, and there are new tests that reveal that by checking for variations in the MTHFR gene. And people who have single hits or double hits of two types of mutations of MTHFR are people who are certainly candidates for methyl donor supplementation with folic acid, B12, possibly riboflavin and B6, perhaps choline or trimethylglycine, also referred to as betaine, not the betaine hydrochloride, but simply betaine. These are supplements that help with methylation in people who are vulnerable because they have a genetic flaw via a methylation, via an MTHFR mutation. So genetics certainly may play a role. What about the effects of drugs? Well, statins are controversial because some say that statins will actually prevent dementia. They reason that, well, dementia has to do with poor circulation, and if you have high cholesterol, that if you lower your cholesterol, that will reduce your atherosclerosis. You'll have better circulation in your heart and your brain. And also, there's an anti-inflammatory effect of statins. So that's often touted as a benefit of statins, that you'll stave off mental decline. Well, the problem is that the brain is composed largely of cholesterol. If you lower cholesterol synthesis, you may actually damage or harm the brain. And there are people who make a pretty cogent case that statin drugs can cause mental decline. There are certainly some people very vulnerable to that effect. They experience cognitive decline that almost is like Alzheimer's disease just from the statins alone. When we remove the statins, they think more clearly. There are actually cases of something called TGA, transient global amnesia, that occur with statin drugs. So we like to look at patients' use of statin drugs and give them a trial off the statins to see if they do better. To me, it doesn't make a lot of sense to put patients with Alzheimer's on statin drugs to protect their hearts when the big problem is that they're losing their brains. There are what are called anticholinergic medicines. Acetylcholine is an important neurotransmitter in the brain that is responsible for thinking and memory. And there are medications that block that effect. These medications include medications that are used for urinary tract problems and certain antidepressant drugs. And the anticholinergic effects of these medications may not be noticed in a young person who has a lot of brain reserve, but an older person who's teetering on the brink of dementia, these drugs might push them right over the edge and cause them to experience a decline in their cognition, mental function. And by carefully reviewing the medications people take, urinary tract medications don't work all that well anyway. So get people off those medications, other medications that are anticholinergic, and sometimes they think better. Also, interestingly, a very high percentage of older people are on acid-blocking medications. These drugs interfere with the absorption of vitamin B12. As we'll discover in part two of this podcast, part two of our podcast, we're going to talk about some of the supplements that are helpful for Alzheimer's disease treatment and prevention. But if you're deficient in B12, that can actually mimic Alzheimer's disease. You can have major problems with cognitive function, real difficulty with thinking, and giving patients oral B12, or better yet, giving them B12 shots can really turn things around and improve cognition and thinking. Unfortunately, a lot of older people are put on blood pressure medication. And what's interesting about blood pressure medication is, your blood pressure is too high. That's not good for your brain. Actually, that will have an erosive effect on the arteries in your brain, damage circulation, lead to strokes. And these strokes accumulate. And as you knock off more and more of your brain, there's less gray matter and white matter to help you think. So definitely you want to control hypertension. But interestingly, in older individuals, after the age of 80 or 85, arteries become stiff. And if you over-control blood pressure, what will happen is, because of the stiffness of the arteries and poor circulation in general, there won't be enough blood flow to the brain. And if your blood pressure is like 90 over 60 or over-controlled, you won't actually get enough blood to your brain. You can feel dizzy, lightheaded, and have difficulty thinking and focusing. So overuse of blood pressure medications, that has to be investigated in people who have Alzheimer's disease or dementia. Another big problem is that older people sometimes get, a little depressed, a little anxious, and so they're prescribed anti-anxiety medication. And once again, younger people can tolerate these medications like Valium and Xanax and these various even sleep medications. And older people metabolize more slowly, so these medications build up. And Ativan is one of these medications. Halcyon is a sleep med that can have devastating effects in an older person. And these medications can really knock you out mentally, make you feel mentally dull. They're often responsible for higher risk of falls in the elderly because of difficulty with balance and concentration. So these are medications generally to be avoided. Preferable alternatives exist in the natural world. And when we talk about anxiety and depression, we'll cover those as well. So another big factor that may play a role in the causation of Alzheimer's disease, and we focus on this in natural medicine, is environmental pollution. And it's a little bit hard sometimes to get a handle on all the 60,000 or 75,000 different environmental chemicals that we have in our environment. We actually have restrictive rules in the state of New York that you can't even test patients for some of these things. So let's presume that we're all exposed to some of these. Certainly if you smoke, that has a devastating effect because that concentrates harmful chemicals and deprives your brain of oxygen via carbon monoxide. So that's obviously an accelerant for something like dementia and Alzheimer's disease. But just breathing, normal urban air or imbibing many of the compounds that we find in our food and water can have a deleterious effect on the brain. There's a theory of what is called neuroexcitation, which was advanced by Russell Blaylock. And he postulates that there are neuroexcitatory compounds present in MSG, and in NutraSweet, and overstimulating, they stimulate the taste buds, but they also may overstimulate the brain and literally burn out the brain circuitry, thus accelerating the development of dementia, Alzheimer's disease, and other neurodegenerative diseases. But the single environmental pollutant par excellence that we find in our patients, not single because there's several members of this category, heavy metals. And mercury may lead the list. People get too much mercury via fish especially, also dental fillings and exposure to paints, chemicals in the environment. Also lead. Lead is definitely neurotoxic, cadmium to a certain extent as well. And we test our patients with dementia and neurological disease for levels of these heavy metals, and they may be candidates for chelation with either oral DMSA or intravenous EDTA as a way of getting some of those harmful chemicals out of their bodies. So these are some of the things that can be looked at as causative factors. In our second part of this podcast on the subject of Alzheimer's disease treatment and prevention, we're going to look at some of the individual supplements and nutraceuticals that can be employed to treat this condition. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, Clinical Focus, Alzheimer's Disease.